Okay, so along came Freud. And a very revolting character. I mean, a very revolting, a revolutionary person. He turned healing on its ear, or set it on its ear, turned it over to the other side after all those centuries of that sort of thing. Madness is bad spirits, madness is bad beliefs, madness is suggestion, madness is bad organs. What did he say? He said, madness is defensive behavior. He said, when people do mad things, they're trying to protect themselves from something. Now, for the first time in the history of humanoids, these strange antics that people do were seen as functional. The mad act had a job to do. It served a purpose. It had an end. It was manufactured by the person to accomplish something. Up to that time, you see, madness was seen as an eruption of something, or a cup of bad juice triggered the muscles to do something, like the falling sickness, epilepsy. Well, you know, something went off, bang, and naturally the muscles would jump around. Person will cuss and wet their pants and stuff like that. But purely mechanical, you see. But here is a man saying, hey, wait a minute now. This behavior makes sense. It isn't nonsense at all. It is quite intelligible. It's even symbolic. It symbolizes. Behavior, mad behavior, is a metaphor. It's a message. You can decipher it. All mad antics, even what he called the psychopathology of everyday life, all of us do crazy things. Always for the same reason, to protect ourselves. Do we protect ourselves? Defend ourselves consciously, wittingly, knowingly, on purpose, with full awareness? No, he said, we don't do that. It's all unconscious, all unwitting. We are unaware of what we are trying to do when we do these, when we undertake these defensive antics. This idea fascinated the then healers of Europe and North America, especially North America, especially the Americans. America opened their arms to Freud and embraced him. America became the Freudian camp. A lot of the Europeans were chary of this idea. It certainly went against the grain. It went against a tradition that was 2,000 years old. For him to say that madness is intelligible, meaningful, purposive, albeit unconsciously purposive, behavior. And you know, maybe the European physicians, healers, didn't like what he was saying, especially since he added to this idea, the idea that what one was protecting was one's libido, he called it, that is to say, the flow of life, one's life energy, sexual desire, that's what you're protecting, the instincts. One is protecting oneself against the blockage of one's instincts. But and of course this idea was offered in the heart, in the middle of the Victorian era in Europe. At the height of the Victorian era, which was, as you know, literally straight-laced. That's to say, you laced everything up clear to here, in fact, even beyond. They had their collars up around like that and wore big bustles to hide whatever there was there to see. And the skirts were clear down to the ankles and beyond. You know, my father once told me that when he was a little boy, his mother warned his sisters. He was quite a bit younger than his sisters. My father was born in 1891. And his sisters were born in 1870, around there, 70, 71, 72, and so on. So they were, when he was a little boy, they were young women. And my grandmother warned them, the girls, you know, don't you let those young men get too close to you, because if you do, they'll reach over with the toe of their foot, they'll lift up your skirt and look at your ankles. Compare that to today's modern super bikini, and you'll see what kind of an era Freud introduced the idea of pansexuality into. So people forgot what he offered, which was an absolute revolution, a revolutionary idea which explained madness, and everybody paid attention to Freud's theory of sexual behavior. They still do. They still have forgotten. My God, this man said, he reversed 2,000 years of belief with one idea, the defense. That's what madness is. That's what, when people do funny things that you can't explain, when they do odd, eccentric things, they're doing one thing, they're protecting themselves. Well, the idea stuck, though. It didn't go away. Healers were absolutely fascinated with this idea, and he attracted a lot of people to his tutelage, and they formed societies and they studied together, and true, the Freudians, I think, went up a blind alley, and they began studying the symbolism, the way a person disguises his repressed sexuality. But they did an awful lot of reading, an awful lot of writing, an awful lot of talking to each other. And always embedded in all of this talk about sex and its repression and its release was the idea of defense. I'm going to suggest that there is a ladder up to here, 1982, but I'm going to call it the holistic theory of madness. And I want to point out the steps to that theory that we have right now. We, I say, a few of us have. Most people don't have it yet. Fullerton does. Fullerton is probably the only institution in the world that has it as in as much detail as it has. The rest of the institutions have got little pieces of it, but Fullerton has got it all. Okay, the first step up out of this, it was a big one, because those ideas, bad fluids, bad beliefs, suggestion, and bad organs, are from the Dark Ages, literally. So it was a big step up for the idea of defense, the defense neurosis, they call it. In fact, his paper on it had the title, The Defense Psychoneuroses. And that was, I think, in 1889 or something like that. The first hint. Now, when I say there's a step, these are steps up to this idea, that means that idea is still useful. It hasn't gone away. We can throw away most of Freud. We can't throw that away. That's still very much there. A very, very useful idea, I should say. Now, a person that was a little younger than Freud, and at first, when Freud first began to talk about defense and repression and symbolizing of unconscious desires, a man named Alfred Adler became a correspondent with him and joined him in Vienna, and they had many, many talks together, wrote many letters back and forth, and Freud saw Adler as his heir apparent. Only trouble is, Adler was so different from Freud, and Adler had his own ideas. He wasn't buying Freud's, but he did buy the one idea, defense. Nothing else, but he did say, yeah, people do crazy things to protect themselves. But not to protect themselves from the truncation or squeezing off or closing off of the flow of libido, instinct repression, but to protect their pride. Adler introduced the idea that everybody has to feel good about themselves. They've got to have a good, he put it many, many ways. One has to have a good opinion of oneself, or one will be sick. And when one's opinion of oneself gets low, when one begins to feel ashamed of oneself, then one does something to return that feeling of pride, self-esteem. Self-regard. So he introduced this idea shortly after, just about 1900. He says, my gosh, it's time to go, isn't it? He then brought in the idea of pride. He didn't call it pride, but it's the same idea, self-esteem, self-regard, a good opinion of oneself. And that took us a very long way toward the idea up here, the holistic theory. Didn't get us there, but it sure got us a long way from the Dark Ages. So that it's defense of pride, and you will see that word defense going all the way up. And landing up at the top, on top of these things. So next time I'll give you these remarks. ideas on, and come up to the holistic theory, and then launch into that. I've taken a couple of steps. May I remind you that I had reviewed the humoral theory, or spirit theory, or fluid theory, or juice theory, as I like to put it, back from about 5,000 BC to the present, noting that in the 17th century, the notion of evil fluids, or juices, or spirits, have held sway, and then in the 18th century, we had animal spirits, or juices, or fluids, as the explanation for madness. Then, in the 19th century, along with the juice theory, came the sick organ theory, that some organ was out of whack. And the major proponent of that perspective was Emil Kraepelin. We still have that one with us today in the DSM and countless other documents, and spoken by countless other voices. So we have both the bad organ theory still with us very much. That's probably the majority view, and the bad juices notion still very much with us. A second physicalist account of madness, probably second only to the bad organ idea as an explanation of crazy behavior. Then came the 20th century, and with it Freud's magnificent idea of that madness is functional behavior, the function being that of protection or defense. The idea is that madness works to some end, and this was called the dynamic theory. And now when you hear the word psychodynamics, you'll understand what dynamics at least means. It's function, work. Indeed, the word dyna is Greek for power. I think that something equivalent to the word that we will come to shortly, urge or erg, which turns into Germanic work. It works. Now that's drooling and slavering over the idea. It was so yummy. The idea that madness works. And that was the beginning of modern systems theory or holism. Don't put that down. Systems is a very special idea, subordinate to the idea of holism, which I will point out very carefully to you. But that was the dawning, that was when Western man first understood the very essence of madness, that it was behavior put to work to accomplish an aim. So it was then seen by some, not by the people who believed in juices or organs doing things, but by the others, as purposive behavior, the will So let me draw my ladder again. Or my stairway, I should say. Looking forward to this marvelous platform, holism, and going backwards to these great ideas that led up to the final, the clincher. And I wish to recall for you that these ideas were not left behind, but they were, they went up the stairway with the other ideas and kind of collected them along, so that the notion of defense, and parenthetically the notion of work, that mad behavior has work to do, namely that of protection, now joins the next idea, and the next, and the next, and the next, and it's going to end up here alongside of the other principles or rules about that I shall point out how these are consistent with holism. I think I mentioned that the second construct, the next fiction, the next belief that came upon the heels of the idea of defense by an acquaintance and colleague of Freud, namely Adler, was that Adler, agreeing with Freud, captivated by the idea that madness does some work. Freud had said that the work that madness does is to protect the excretion of the effluviance of one's instinctual life, one's libido. It protects that, the free flow of libido, life instinct. And remember, he more and more said it was the sexual instinct, the instinct to reproduce, to be eternal. Adler disagreed with him. He said, I agree that man is a creature of instinct, yes, but the instinct is not survival or sexual. In nature, the instinct is for equality. Man must be equal to his to others, and otherwise he does not feel good about, he does not have a good opinion of himself, and so he undertakes what he called the great upward movement toward equality, and is proud of himself insofar as he reaches and maintains this equality. If he doesn't, he feels ashamed of himself and has a low opinion of himself. And, said Adler, when he has a low opinion of himself, when he does not feel equal, he will make arrangements and undertake maneuvers. Those are his words now. Adler was talked in a very simple way, in a simple Germanic way. He was not so much in love with the Greek or the Latin that he spoke other than Deutsch. He spoke simple Deutsch. Scratch that, because maneuver and arrangement, I'm afraid, are Latin. He tended to think, he was a pragmatist. He thought very pragmatically, very simply, very straightforwardly. And so he would latch onto one term like his buddies did, but he had a whole long list of words that meant pretty much the same thing. He would look for words that, he would ask, what advantages does this kind of activity get the person? What does it do to you for this person to act this way? You would ask questions like that. As soon as you can figure out what it does to you, then you know why the person is doing it. He's doing it for what it does to you in relation to him. So he had the first then outcroppings of the social theory of madness. Think of the idea of pride for a moment. How could Robinson Crusoe protect his pride on this deserted island? He couldn't. There was no image to maintain, no appearance to maintain. There had to be somebody else for him to have pride. See, pride then is a social phenomenon, is it not? Having an opinion of oneself occurs in a social context. So we have to credit Adler with a word that was going to show up around mid-century. The word is tactics. He didn't use the word, but he came very close to it in talking about maneuvers and arrangements. I'm surprised that he did not use the word stratagems. He did not, that I know about. But Adlerian thinking about madness was strategic. He saw madness as a strategic sequence of behaviors, with the person pragmatically oriented, always looking to the consequences of what he did, and then seeing the consequences of what he did, adjusting his next arrangement, his next maneuver, to suit what was going on between him and his fellows. Major step then, very early in the century, toward holism. Then, 10, 15 years later, a German now, Ernst Kretschmer, published in 1925 his ideas about temperament or character. And said that everybody is has one character structure or another. Everybody has a personality. Everybody has a temperament. Everybody has a style. And everybody is either schizophrenic in his temperament or his character, or cyclothymic. And I won't bother you with what these words are, how these words are translated into the Germanic right now. Schizophrenic, cyclothymic. And what he's saying is that a very, very important idea. And so remember, 1925, and of course he was talking this way for close to 20 years before he put it in print. So the idea is contemporary of that, of the first two, defense, pride, now the idea Everybody, not just not just crazy people now, everybody is either schizophrenic or psychophonic. And he talked very carefully, mapped out the pattern of behavior of the schizophrenes and of the psychophones. Someday you should read Ernst Kretschmer's marvelous book on temperament. The title of the book is Physique and Temperament. Most people did not read Kretschmer, at least most English-speaking people, and French and Italian and Spanish-speaking. Probably most Germans did read Ernst Kretschmer. But even when the books were translated into the other languages, very few people read them, and they got sidetracked by his Kretschmer's interest in physique, body, and in the relationship between body and behavior, and saddled him with the notion that your behavior is exclusively determined by your body build, which is utter nonsense, and he never said that. That's ridiculous. And then the person that followed him, William Sheldon, got saddled with the same absurdity. And people, scholars included, and certainly clinicians, failed to note that neither one of these men would say so preposterous a thing as that. But also they failed to notice that both of them had a temperament theory of madness. He said that madness is a function of one's temperament, one's style, one's character structure. Flying in the face of the infection theory of madness, which was that either your fluids are infected or imbalanced, or some organ is infected, and therefore pushing the button on all sorts of weird behaviors. So we have the emergence then, 1925, 1905, 1900, thereabouts. I mean, ballpark, right? I think it was 1890, thereabouts, and 1900, 1925. We have a gap there, you see, of steps up to the final pinnacle. That is correct. I said that. Yeah, they are not that stupid. As a matter of fact, they were both very brilliant men, and they wouldn't say a stupid thing like that. Of course, they wouldn't talk that way anyway, you see, because neither one of them, as you will see when I start talking about holism, they do not traffic in causes. As you will see, causality as an idea is an atomistic or elementalistic idea, and absolutely useless by those of the holist persuasion. So they, you know, didn't occur to them that there's even a problem here. This criticism was hurled at them by their lessors, who usually hadn't even bothered to read them anyway, then read some textbook writer's view of them, who himself had not apparently, I've read many, many textbooks, accounts, and I can't believe that these guys that wrote these textbooks actually read what Kretschmer or Sheldon said. If they did, they were stupid. If they didn't, They were stupid. In either case, stupid. Every once in a while, I'll hit a topic where you're going to see a little anger, and I apologize for it, but these two guys were badly mistreated by their colleagues, as was Milton Erickson later on. Another 25 years were to pass with an incredible step up in the amount of research and argumentation and debate about what's happening, what people are doing, why are they doing that. Explosion in all of the universities in Europe and North America. None of them, though, taking up these three ideas. Well, correction, the idea of pride, protection, and fruition of type were left to lie fallow. The idea of defense was taken up with a vengeance, and those of you who have read the Freudian literature and the so-called psychodynamic literature know what happened to the idea in the hands of the Freudian disciples and apologists. An awful lot of activity in those 25 years. So much so that Freudian ideas became extremely dominating, certainly in North America, and after, by the early 50s, they had started to capture Europe too. Understand that Freudian psychology is now very, very dominant throughout Europe. It took it a long time to come from America back to Europe to take over again. Now came a very brilliant anthropologist into the fray, not a psychologist, not a medic, not a sociologist, but an anthropologist named Gregory Bateson. And he introduced an extremely intriguing idea that still hasn't caught on, by the way, but revolutionized the theory of madness overnight, or almost overnight, and I'm going to use the metaphor, being an anthropologist, he had studied all sorts of tribes and cultures and groups around the world, and had observed similarities around the world. He, of course, was very conversant with Sir James Frazer's magnificent works on the customs and mores and myths and folklore in all cultures around the globe. Very, very learned man. Said that the function of madness is to protect the group.
Bateson.
Greg Bateson. The function of madness is to protect the group. Let me turn down that volume. The input is constant. that the some one individual in some group, say a family, when things go wrong, is said to be role cast as a scapegoat. A scapegoat is a goat that somebody takes along when they're going through lion country or tiger country. And if there's a lion in the bushes, the lion will come up and chomp down the goat and you split. In other words, a sacrifice. So he introduced into psychiatry the idea that madness is sacrificial behavior. And later on, it was going to be identified with a concept of out of holism called homeostasis, steady state, or same state. Constancy. But the point, I think the metaphor works better here, is to understand the social function of madness, that it's not now the eruption of something from inside the person, but it is a reaction to the situation that the group is embedded in. And now this, not only does madness serve to protect the person's pride, but it serves to protect the stability of the group of which this person is a member. He now becomes the scapegoat, or the sacrificial lamb. You would think, I should say, one would think, that this would have created quite a ripple, a wave, in the thinking of people who are concerned about madness and its cure. It didn't even cause a ripple. But the idea was registered then. And then in 1955 came the now famous bombshell, which I trust you have all read by now, written by Bateson et al., one of the most important ets being Jay Haley. So Bateson and Haley and some other guys wrote an article, the title of which, Toward a Theory of Schizophrenia. That was the first inkling, because nobody read Bateson's book, The Social Matrix of Psychiatry, which he wrote with Jürgen Reusch, a linguist, philologist. I'll come back to Reusch later on, but people just didn't bother with the book. It was terribly complicated, terribly erudite, learned, difficult reading, boring. But in it was that idea of the scapegoat idea. Then in 1955 came that famous article, Toward a Theory of Schizophrenia, in which the theory of the double bind was announced. Yeah. It was printed in Psychiatry, I believe, the journal called Psychiatry. I don't remember now. Later on, it got put in several books, one of which was Bateson's compendium, Steps to an Ecology of Mind. It's printed there. It's also printed in Don Jackson's book on schizophrenia. So it's printed in various places, but it came out first as an article. Again, you would think that it would have caused a tidal wave. It caused merely a ripple, because it's such a departure from thinking about organs getting the muscles to do things, or fluids getting the muscles to do things on their own. It's such a departure that it requires not just a shift in frame of reference, it takes another whole person that has not been browbeaten or coerced or brought up in an atmosphere of physicalism. Physicalism, those who have thought this way all their lives could not make the switch. They simply didn't have enough urging or enough reward or enough punishment or whatever, or enough intelligence to shuck off and get rid of the physicalist notions that they had been trained with. And notice that it took somebody from outside the field to change the direction of the field. It took an anthropologist, a psychiatrist or psychologist. A medic could never do it. It took the cooperation of a philologist, Jay Haley, and an anthropologist, Gregory Bateson, to change the course of psychiatry. Notice that. Nobody else had the perspective